What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, welcome to Fightful. Here with a name you know. You've seen him so many times here on Fightful, and quite frankly, literally everywhere else you've seen him. We're here talking New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed, Friday, November 8th, from Lowell, Massachusetts. You can watch it on New Japan World as well. We got Rocky Romero. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Sean. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Lots of stuff to talk about. How many places did you cash checks from last month?
Quite a few. Some pretty major companies cashing checks. Yeah,
it's pretty awesome. Like I talked to Atlantis Jr. Yesterday, and we were just talking. And I was like, we did that interview for MLW, but he still wrestles for AEW and ROH and New Japan. And CMLL. CMLL. And I talked specifically to you about this. It's got to feel pretty good to see those doors open the way that they have been, no pun intended. And you're a major reason for that.
Yeah. I think it's a very special time in the business. And, obviously there's a lot of major companies working together, and they obviously see the value in working together. And to be a part of that and help to bring that into fruition is pretty cool. It's definitely something that I hope will be one of the long lasting things in my professional wrestling legacy. So it's pretty cool.
So as we film this, we're filming this on Thursday, but like minutes ago, I got word of the strong openweight champion, Gabe Kidd. Somebody had sent in footage from something we had heard about the other day. A little bit of an altercation there, and the people that I got the footage from actually saw a little bit more of it. Gabe Kidd, Kenny Omega, what did you make of that when you saw that? And what do you make of Gabe Kidd in general?
That kind of stuff is not a thing that happens in New Japan a lot, or very often at all. So, a little disappointed in the way that it went down, especially with Gabe. I understand Gabe and always kind of wanting to interject himself into things when it doesn't have anything to do with him, and there's good and bad that goes along with that, guys, trying to get their name out there at the expense of, a big name like Kenny Omega, but there's a better way to go about that. So, I think Gabe is obviously a very unique talent. I think the way that he sells, wrestling like Conor McGregor or somebody like that, he's very special in the way that his approach and look to wrestling is. And, I applaud that. And I think he's going to be a major, major star in time. And, but I don't know. Yeah. I can't really comment too much about it. I know that there's some stuff that's going on with our president, Mr. Tanahashi, and I think Gabe is going to pay a pretty heavy fine for everything. So we'll see what happens.
So something I'm interested to hear you comment on is something that you see both sides of, I'm sure. Kenny Omega made a return. This is literally the first time we've seen him be physical. Mm-hmm. Since he was written off of AEW TV. And even before then, we're lucky we saw that, because it's clear he had some serious issues for a year. There were a lot of people that said, why New Japan? Why not AEW? Personally, I chalked it up as goodwill for the nature of this relationship. I mean, mm-hmm. It's clear AEW signs a lot of New Japan's talent away from them. Why not give them something like this that would be important to them? How did you view that and sort of the discourse related to, well, maybe he should have appeared on AEW first as opposed to New Japan?
I think Japan is, and especially New Japan, is something that's very special to Kenny. And, I think he doesn't forget, where this boom for Kenny Omega started. And I think it was obviously in New Japan, many years ago. So I think for that, aspect of it, it's very important. And, he is an EVP, and, I know he takes that role pretty serious, especially, he's one of the guys who founded the company. So I think, it's a goodwill type of gesture to come back. And obviously, he's a massive name in Japan. I mean, a massive, massive name. So obviously, the first time doing Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th is a big deal. And, you know, one of the biggest names that we could have on the show, if not the biggest, is Kenny Omega. So I you know, I thought that that was really important. And you know, Kenny has been influential in the relationship between New Japan and AEW since day one, even when the days when there was a forbidden door and nobody was going through it. He was one of the guys who was trying to break that down, you know? So, yeah. So I think for him, it's a relationship that's very important. And especially now that Tanahashi is the president, you know, they have an interesting relationship. And we saw like a month ago, they released a really cool video where Kenny came back to Japan and they talked about, you know, the future and some of the past issues between them both. And, you know, cause they're two guys that completely see professional wrestling in two completely different ways. And that was part of their story, you know, when they wrestled. So, yeah, I think it's overall, it's interesting. And I don't think it takes away from Kenny coming back to AEW. I think it just makes the question even bigger of when he'll come back to AEW.
So, that naturally brings me up to Wrestle Dynasty, which, I mean, this weekend's Fighting Spirit Unleashed, you've already got Lio Rush from AEW, Takeshita from AEW, Trish Adore, who spent time there, Anna Jay. Like, you've got AEW talent all over New Japan shows already. The Wrestle Dynasty thing, very interesting, because we have seen sort of the two-night Tokyo Dome before. But this one is a natural progression of the Forbidden Door relationship. And everybody says, well, when are they taking it over there? That seems to be the answer to this. What can you tell us about the process of making that a reality?
Yeah, very similar to Forbidden Door, you know, extremely similar in the process of kind of setting it up and forth between both companies and trying to decide on what's best.
I lost you a little bit.
Yeah, obviously.
Oh, now you're back. Now you're back. Hey. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, really important to both companies, you know, like you said, you know, building off of Forbidden Door and taking it over to Japan and obviously New Japan's version of that, which is Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. And you know, going back and forth between both companies, you know, it's very similar process and, you know, trying to decide on what's best for each company and also what parts of, you know, are each company going to protect, you know, because obviously, you know, they are two different companies and in two different parts of the world. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of challenges that goes along with that. And, you know, especially it's a little different on the Japanese side because there are visas and stuff that you have to get in time and certain red tape. But it's going very smoothly. And I think tomorrow night in Lowell, Friday night, you're going to see a lot of progression as well. So obviously we saw a ton of progression in Osaka, you know, Ricochet coming out and challenging Zack Sabre Jr., which was awesome to see Ricochet after so many years. And, you know, he's a completely different man now than the time he spent in New Japan. And he got an incredible reaction. And tomorrow night you'll see more stuff in Lowell that'll progress those stories. And as well as, and December 15th, you know, we've got a big show in Long Beach, California for New Japan Strong. And that'll probably have some more progression as well. So it's kind of firing on all sides and it's pretty cool. You know, this is the Forbidden Door is swung open and now it's, you know, we're off to the races and going to try to make Wrestle Dynasty, you know, one of the greatest pay-per-views that we've ever seen.
So that begs the question, like, how is it decided who can lose where, who can do that, especially with somebody like you who is, you've got your hand in all of these talent and all of these companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I work very closely with Tony on this end and I work very close with the booking committee in Japan and Tanahashi and everybody involved with that. You know, obviously everybody knows who's important on their side and it kind of always starts there. And then we can kind of trickle down to see like where everybody fits. And it's like a big puzzle, you know, putting it all together and trying to make everybody happy. And, you know, there's side deals that go along. It's a lot like playing Monopoly. There's like side deals going on, you know, like, okay, well, if we do give you this here, you know, can we get this there and or in the future? So, I think it's been a very successful, compromise on both sides since the relationship started. And I know, like, there's people who probably don't fully understand the scope of it, but are quick to, make their opinion known, of who's getting more and who's not. And I always say, like, this is a relationship that's not here, for 6 months, we're doing one show and that's it. I mean, this is going to be a relationship that is going to be built for, and worked on for a very long time. So I always tell people, have patience, and I think that that's the one thing in professional wrestling that most fans and most people don't have is patience to see how it's all going to play out.
What I like about the fact that you have cultivated so much of this is, like, this isn't new for you. Like, but within your first few years of wrestling, you were working MLW, ROH, All Japan, New Japan, CMLL. Like, you were already working a variety of different companies, and you saw firsthand maybe some of the issues that mm-hmm. these companies might have had with one another. And you were probably well equipped to help bridge a lot of those anyway. Like, I've never heard of you losing your temper, never heard of you losing your cool, anything like that,
right?
Which seems like a very important quality to have when dealing with a multitude of companies.
No, for sure. I think that I think that's one of the unique things that I bring in my skill set that maybe others don't have. And plus, I try to look at it as, these relationships are important because in the end, it's a business, and everybody, it's important to make money. It's important to have projection for each company and each wrestler that's involved in all this. So in the end, I think that that's what's important. If we can keep the eye on the ball of what's actually important, then, don't sweat the little stuff. There's always going to be issues. There's always going to be problems. There's going to be disagreements, and that's okay. But as long as we keep our eye on the prize and see the bigger picture, another part of the big picture is, WWE is a massive company, and mm-hmm. they're, only getting bigger and bigger, now with the merger. So, for the rest of us who are outside of that WWE bubble, it makes sense to work together and kind of have this union between these companies who have been around for 50 plus years, like New Japan or CMLL, and AEW, who's just been around for 5 years, but has, in 5 years done some tremendous, tremendous things in the world, So yeah, I think it all makes sense. And I know, I feel like I do want to speak on this. It's like, people don't fully understand, like, Okada leaving New Japan and joining mm-hmm. AEW, Ospreay leaving New Japan and starting at AEW. It wasn't that AEW went and stole that talent exactly. There's more to these backstories than just like, oh yeah, AEW just said, hey, here's X amount of dollars, come with us. There's more to it, and I'm sure, Sean, you're very, you hear a lot of things and that go on in professional wrestling. And it's not as simple as that. It's actually, it's more complex than that. And, if Okada was going to leave and say, go to WWE, I think that it serves New Japan and it serves AEW for Tony to try to step in and try to keep him on this side.
Sure.
And same thing with Ospreay.
Before AEW was a thing, like, I fully expected ROH and New Japan to start offering dual contracts of some mm-hmm. sort because of the nature of the direction of wrestling. And
it
always is strongest when 2A and 2B work in unison, I think. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's always worked well. Because I remember just a few years ago, I was talking to Davey Boy Smith Jr., and he was like, yeah, I asked New Japan if I could work TNA, and they said, no, Jeff Jarrett fucked us over. And he said that he was like, that was four regimes ago.
Yeah. And that's a part of it, is just keeping, obviously, new regimes come in, and, and some I have stronger ties with some than others. But, I try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, at least. And if it makes sense, to everyone that's on board, I mean, why not give it a go? And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. That's okay too,
And another one of those TNA regimes that now seems to be off on his own, Scott D'Amore. You worked for Maple Leaf Pro. Mm-hmm. It looked it looked like Canadian TNA. It looked great. I felt like the show, I mean, listen, there's no Black Label Pro right now. Mission Pro is taking time off. PWG is taking time off. I feel like there's a real gap for something like that, especially in Canada, that grew this great crop of talent in the early 2000s. How was that experience for you?
It was awesome. I thought the both nights were really, really good. And I thought Scott has put together not only a great in-ring, product and talent wise and talent pool, but also backstage. You know, he's got a great set of people that he's working with. And I thought it looked amazing, I think he'll be a pretty strong partner for New Japan as well, especially in America and Canada. And,
anywhere worth going is worth going in good boots. And you can find your perfect pair at Tecovas. Tecovas crafts quality Western boots for everyone, from generational ranchers and lifelong cowboys to first-time boot buyers, which is what I was up until a couple of years ago. Growing up in Kentucky, you see boots everywhere. But I never jumped into the game until I found Tecovas, and I love it. Every one of Tecovas boots are handcrafted with over 200 meticulous steps for broken-in comfort right out of the box. Whether it's a long day or a big night, your Tecovas are built to last and impress. That's why Esquire loves them and says they're the reason we keep coming back to Tecovas. They are so comfortable. Plus, with Tecovas Best in the West guarantee, you get free returns and exchanges for 30 days. And right now, get 10% off at tecovas.com/SRS when you sign up for email and text. That's 10% off at tecovas.com/SRS. That's tecovas.com/SRS. See site for details. Tecovas, point your toes west.
We've been talking to Scott about a lot of cool projects that we might be able to do next year. And, I think Maple Leaf, and like you said, it's cool to see an actual Canadian product, it's been so long since there's been a real strong Canadian product to come out of Canada that has, primarily Canadian talent. And then, also he's a guy who I've seen that does a lot of the things that I do and create relationships with other companies and be very pro that. So he's always been a breeze to work with, and he's a good guy, and I wish him nothing but success. And I think that there's definitely some space for New Japan Strong and New Japan to work with him.
We got in addition to Fighting Spirit Unleashed, obviously Tokyo Dome show every year. How does that work when planning for AEW to send talent over there? Because obviously you've got TV to run every week as well. You got to get around that. Is that something where you look at the schedule and like this year it's Saturday, Sunday, so it's clear and good to go? Or is it one of those things where you've got to plan well ahead of time?
Yeah. A lot of planning went in, like 10 months ago, I think that when this all kind of started, Mr. Kidani, who's the owner of New Japan of Stardom and Bushiroad, came to America, and Tana was there as well. And we all met with Tony in Las Vegas, actually, over Double or Nothing weekend, and kind of started to set the plan of okay, Forbidden Door, of course, and then obviously these two January shows, the 4th and 5th in 2025, and as well as other things in the future, some big stuff that's going on with AEW in the future and how New Japan will fit into that as well, going into next year. So all this has been kind of plotted and talked about, since day one. And there's way more details that go into that, like when it comes to talent and who's, because sometimes you don't know who's going to be doing what at what time and who's going to be occupied, who's not, who's going to be champion, who's not. I mean, there's all stuff that you can't really say, 10 months out. It's pretty well in advance. One of the things that Tony always said was like, okay, that first week in January is going to be obviously a big deal for AEW. And, we plan on having, two live shows probably that week. So, and of course, like them, you know, renegotiating their deal with Warner, and all that was all up in the air, you know, at that time. So, but also taken into consideration. So for both sides. So, so yeah, but I think I'm pretty happy with the way it's worked out and the talent that it will be appearing on January 4th and 5th. So I think it kind of worked out pretty well, and we'll see, you know, like, I don't know if it's something that we could keep up every year, you know,
but I
definitely think would like to see it, you know, as we're doing Saturday and Sunday. I mean, I love the 2-day Tokyo Dome. It just makes so much sense for New Japan, because especially for people who are traveling from all across the world, why not get 2 nights of Tokyo Dome? It makes a lot of sense. And
especially, you know, when they seem like distinct shows as well, like it's as different.
Well. Right. As well. So yeah, I think once the final card is out, I think people are going to really be excited and amazed for it. And I think it's definitely going to have a much different feel than Forbidden Door, you know, being presented by New Japan. You know, the production is very different, you know, especially for those Tokyo Domes. And I think it's going to be very special, and I'm pumped for it.
My big question is, why did you slam the Forbidden Door in Mercedes Moné's face and not answer her phone call to get her into CMLL? She put you on blast, Rocky.
I know. I apologize. I saw her yesterday. I apologized to her because I was like, it was so funny. You know, it was like 4 or 5 a.m. I was in Japan, so I was doing my best. I promise. I was doing my best to you know, it was very last second. You know, she's like, I would love to do something. And so like, I, you know, reached out to CML immediately, but was hoping to get some kind of response back. And while waiting for the response, I mean, sometimes you're really tired and jet lagged and may miss a call, but yeah, the panic that was on my face, you know, when I woke up and to all these mixed calls, and I'm sweating.
Yes.
Already. I'm like, what is, I'm like, oh no. I totally fell asleep. So yeah, dropped the ball, but good thing it wasn't like a major CMLL show. It was like an outside show, and it wasn't like Arena Mexico or something like that, but it would have been cool. So sorry, Mercedes.
How, what did it mean to you, if anything, that you got announced as the VP at New Japan after all you've done there and the work that you have put in there? And again, every time we talk, I'm just fascinated about the process of your job specifically, because there is one person in wrestling who has your job. Like, there are no others. Like, so how was that, and how were you approached with that?
I mean, honestly, it was something that I've been thinking about for a very long time, you know, and like, I'm kind of known as the New Japan guy, right? Like, if there's anything outside of Japan, they're like, oh, reach out to this guy, Rocky Romero. So, and then, but so many times people had asked me, you know, like, oh, well, what's your position? What's your title? And it's like, well, I kind of, I work without one. I mean, I kind of don't really have an official title. So when I renegotiated my deal, and you know, they kind of brought up like, well, you know, would you want to serve as a vice president for the company? And I was like, to be honest, that would take a lot of stress off my plate when I have to talk to somebody and they're like, what do you do exactly? And then I can easily kind of explain to them in this title. So that was really cool, and it also means a lot to me, and I'm sure a lot of wrestlers in general, that just to see the growth of New Japan and having somebody who's non-Japanese in a major role is really, really cool and unique. And just like, it just goes to show that how much trust the company has had in me and how much they believe in me and support me. And so I'm just trying to do my best to live up to that, you know?
I want to take you back. I love going through people's cage match and finding some early matches. And I found a few with you, although like when I look at your Wikipedia, it says you debuted in like 97, but I can't find matches from back then.
Right.
But I found a very early one of you at UPW wrestling Frankie Kazarian and Nova of all people.
Oh, wow. Was Mike that like Bucci. 2000 or 2000?
It would have been September 13th, 2000. So it's Frankie Kazarian and the eventual child. Simon Dean. So, I mean, obviously,
like by then, probably. Yeah.
By then, wrestling fans knew who Nova was because he had the ECW run and all that stuff. But, like, is that a situation where you're in there with a guy like Frankie Kazarian and you both know, yeah, we're probably going to see each other down the line quite a bit? Because, I mean, it's something that, like, you two having the careers that you've had and you're both still there at a high level, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Frankie almost since day one that I started. You know, he started on in the East Coast in Boston, and then he's originally from California, so he came back to California. We trained at the same place, Empire Wrestling Federation, School of Hard Knocks, with Jesse Hernandez and Bill Anderson at that time. And so we hit it off and immediately, and you know, we traveled all the loops together, like all throughout Southern California and Nevada and Arizona, anywhere we could drive to. So you know, he's one of the guys that that are important to me because we've known each other. Chris Daniels, another guy who was around and kind of helped to give us, you know, some kind of like guidance outside of our little bubble, you know, because all these little worlds, you know, that are these smaller indies, especially at that time, you know, Chris was great in giving us, you know, guidance and connections and things like that. And, you know, because he was doing it already on a level that we all wanted to, you know, he was doing 1-800 collect tours, you know, stuff like that, you know, which was really cool. So, so Frankie's a big part of that. And Chris, obviously. And yeah, like, so wrestling Nova, and I was a massive, massive ECW fan. I mean, same. Massive, like, you know, so, you know, I thought it was so cool. You know, I was a teenager. It all made sense. I was like their 100% their demographic. And, you know, so, you know, it wasn't the normal wrestling, right? Like that you've seen, it was presented in a completely different way with these, you know, really grounded characters, you know, that were cool and hip and they used music that wasn't lame, you know, it was real music.
Yes.
So I think, all of that combined, you know, was really cool to me. So yeah, wrestling Nova, I mean, I was a BWO fan, you know, Blue World Order. So, being able to work with him and especially the time where he was, you know, he got really, really into shape, you know, like super fit. And, and he was trying to figure out, you know, it was the end of ECW, and he was trying to figure out what the next steps for himself were going to be. And, you know, so working with him was really cool. Obviously, he's an incredible innovator of cool moves and different stuff. And yeah, it was just one of those great experiences. And like I said, I think it was like maybe 18 or 19 or something like that, like very, very young, very young.
So when I saw that and I saw where it was UPW that sent me down the rabbit hole. I said, okay, what other UPW shows did he work? And I found May 24th, 2000. It was you and Ricky Reyes against the Ballard Brothers. But also that show, main eventing that show was John Cena losing to a fella by the name of Smelly. Yeah. Was his name. And then Samoa Joe defeats Dirty Dave Sanchez as well. Right. Of course, Dirty Sanchez had to make an appearance there. But like, at that point, had they hit your radar? Had you hit their radar? Were there any interactions with like either one of those guys? Or at that time, was it just, you know, a couple guys you just happened to run into on a show?
No. I pretty vividly remember like when Cena started, and you know, at that time they called him the Prototype, you know, that's what his wrestling name. And I was just like, at that time UPW had a deal with WWE as like a developmental or something, and nobody really, I think, truly understood what that any of that meant at that time. So but he was, you know, he was obviously one of the guys that WWE was very interested, obviously his look, and he was massive at that time. He was huge. So but yeah, I mean, it was just a cool experience, you know, not knowing obviously like any of these guys. And there was quite a few guys that came from UPW that got onto TV with WWE, and obviously like Samoa Joe, who did.
I remember the training video that had Samoa Joe, John Cena, Christopher Daniels, Kazarian, all still wrestling.
Yeah.
They could release a new video today just about longevity, because apparently whatever they did ended up working out really well. I mean, that
really well.
That is a really high hit rate for back then.
Yeah, you got to give it up to Rick Bassman. He did have a very good eye for talent and who was going to be around. Tom Howard was also a guy that was important to UPW at that time. So it was a great experience, because that was an introduction to like what, you know, working a TV style. And what was cool is that so much different from, you know, how I started. You know, like how I started was like, you just go and figure it out, right? But here was like a...
Sorry, you cut out a little bit.
We're back. Yeah, at UPW there was like a structured training, you know, so, and it was open 24/7, and a lot of people didn't really take advantage of that training. So, but guys like John Cena were there every day, you know, so and really took it seriously. So, obviously you can see that his work ethic is much different than most.
Well, this Saturday, or this Friday rather, New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed. I know I'm looking forward to Takeshita, TJP. TJP is just killing it.
He's doing great. Yeah.
Fatal four-way, or a four-way match to determine the top contender for the Strong Women's Championship. You got West Coast Wrecking Crew against Dirty Work, which it's so funny because you and I have talked about the Fred Rosser, Tom Lawler promo in the past. And to see them teaming is phenomenal to me.
Yeah.
But Rocky, as always, want to thank you so much for giving me so much time, giving me so much insight on New Japan, AEW. Listen, probably Wrestling Society X at this point. Everywhere else you're getting checks from, all over the place.
No, thank you, Sean. I appreciate it. Like, thanks for giving me the platform to talk about this stuff, and obviously. With everything that I'm doing, and you know, I'm working in all these different companies, New Japan is still, you know, my heart and soul, and it, you know, where I started basically, and they've given me, you know, such an amazing opportunity to do the work that I'm doing, and Friday night in Lowell, it's going to be an incredible show. If you're in the area, you definitely don't want to miss it, and there's a great 30% coupon going out there. That was worked out between AEW and New Japan. So you can use that for tonight as well in Providence, Rhode Island, and tomorrow night in Lowell. And if you miss it and you can't make it, you check it out on ngpwworld.com. It's part of the subscription. You don't have to pay anything extra. And like I said, it's all going to stuff that's going to lead towards January 5th, Wrestle Dynasty. So it's going to be a great next couple of months. I'm excited.
Guys, thank you all so much. Until next time, we're out.